Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Sybil from Williamsburg, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It takes a lot to make a great horror film. You need great makeup and special effects, lots of tight close-ups, and some passable acting. But you also need great sound. Think of all those great sonic moments from old horror classics, the panicked hyperventilating of a lone camera woman in the Blair Witch Project.
I'm scared to close my eyes. I'm scared to open them.
Or this score from the Halloween franchise, composed by the director, John Carpenter. Well, Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman are the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast, and they're here with me in
Soundcheck's House of Horrors.
Welcome.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Now, you guys, in your role as movie daters, must see your fair share of horror flicks, right?
Indeed we do.
They come up year-round and, oh,
more
so
than
many
our
of
fair
them.
Share.
So are there particular sounds that, I mean, how much of the mood of a genuinely scary movie can you attribute to the sound and the music?
So much of it. You can take a scene that looks totally benign, like somebody walking down a hallway or shampooing their hair or even just, you know, getting dressed in the morning, and it can become so menacing and so creepy depending on what music is playing with that.
And there are also kind of, Rafer, there are sound effects. There's the famous scream that seems to be in, like, you know, dozens of movies. You know, thunderclaps and, you know, creaking stairs and stuff. Do those things, have they become cliches, or can they still work?
I feel like they've become cliches in a lot of ways. I think the music box has become a real cliche. You see the music box pop up in a lot of movies. I think that's getting a little tired. Mm. The self-rocking chair, you know, the creak of that. I feel like that's
so
been done a little
scary.
Bit. Kristen's still scared.
Well, now this gets to why we brought the two of you in today. We've asked each of you to come up with a sonically scary moment from a movie that still scares you but doesn't necessarily work for the other. So, Kristen, let's start with you.
You know, I don't think there's anything creepier than children's voices or children's toys. I know Rafer totally disagrees with me right now. If you could see him, he's smiling from ear to ear and laughing because he thinks this is cliche, but children are so creepy. They have those high kind of screechy voices that are out of control. Who knows where those voices are going? And then the kids are so easily possessed by evil. You can possess a kid no matter what you do. In The Omen, in The Exorcist, just possess a kid. And then finally, they look so small and innocent.
Do you have a maternal bone in your body, Kristen?
I love kids. Kids and I get along super well. But, you know, one of the problems with kids is I get along with them. They're so sweet. They're so lovable. But that innocence can belie the truth, which is they can get away with murder if they want to. And anybody who has kids knows that kids can get away with murder.
All right. Give me an example from a scary movie.
Well, I think that Poltergeist is the classic version of a kid-sounding voice in the background, la, 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 and evil. Pure
right.
creepy evil.
Here's Little Carol Ann and the Carol Ann theme from the Poltergeist soundtrack.
What do you look like? Talk loud, I can't hear you! Hey, hello! Hello, I can't hear you!
Now, if I'm listening to that children's choir and I'm seeing a meadow with flowers and little bunnies and deer walking by, that's not scary.
What kind of children are in that field, John? Are they children of the corn?
Yeah.
Seriously, these are scary, scary sounding little children. They seem so innocent, but don't look too closely into that TV because you know what's going to happen.
But Rafer, this doesn't work for you.
You know,
did it work for you at first?
I have to admit, the Poltergeist is a pretty good choice. And what's great about that clip that you played is you can kind of hear the music talking back to her a little bit. You know, you hear the string sort of dripping that way and kind of filling in for whoever that ghost is. But I have to say, again, it's like that darn self-rocking chair. It's been used so much. The children's nursery rhyme, you know, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
Oh,
I feel like it's lost its power for me over the years.
We're speaking with Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. We're talking about scary sounds, scary soundtracks from classic horror films or not so classic horror films. Rafer, what scares you?
Well, you know, I think people scare me the most. I think, you know, a lot of the religious supernatural movies, which I love, they don't quite hit me where it counts the way that a movie about, let's say, a serial killer or an insane person or somebody, an actual living human is coming after you. And that's why, for my pick, I chose Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet. So this features a very sinister cover.
Yes. Well, at least to me, I think most people would agree, it's a cover of the Roy Orbison song, In Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
The scene that I was thinking of, there are two instances of it in the film. The scene I'm thinking of is the very first one. Kyle MacLachlan and Isabella Rossellini have just been caught by Dennis Hopper, who plays her psychotic, monstrous lover / tormentor. And of course, as people like that do, he decides to take them to a party, a quote-unquote party, where the evening's entertainment is Dean Stockwell in this weird drag 60s lounge singer costume, and he's going to do a karaoke version of In Dreams, singing into a lamplight. And I just found it a completely horrifying, dreadful scene.
From the horrifying and dreadful mind of filmmaker David Lynch.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say.
So, Rafer, you're saying that lip-syncing scares you?
Well, you know, I think what scares me, what you can't see in that clip is the face of Dennis Hopper, who is going through this range of emotions. We don't know what he's thinking, but he clearly has some very unpleasant connotations to this song, and his face is contorting in rage. And I feel like what that song gets to, this is a Roy Orbison specialty, what that song gets to is male self-pity, which I think is a really dangerous emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that scene really captures it well.
Kristen, does it scare you? He does mention clowns in the lyrics.
That's true.
Clowns are terrifying, but this scene is not. If you look at this scene as it's unfolding, it's a lot of people in very brightly colored 1980s clothes with close-ups of them just staring off into space. It looks almost like a Saturday Night Live skit. Every time I see this clip, I laugh and laugh and laugh. There's nothing menacing about it. The only menacing thing is that it's trying so hard to be creepy, but it's not succeeding, and there's something sad about that.
Once you've seen Blue Velvet and you've seen Dennis Hopper with the gas mask attached, you know, up to it, even when he doesn't have it, it's just like permanently attached to his face. You know?
I agree.
Now, I mean, that reminds me of a great moment in A Clockwork Orange, at the end of A Clockwork Orange, where the song Singing in the Rain, you know, this kind of classic great American songbook, our parents grew up loving this song, suddenly turns into a cinema creep fest.
At the stormy clouds chase, everyone from the place, come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the rain to a happy and
Singing in the Rain. I mean, you know, way too young to have grown up with Singing in the Rain, but I grew up with that version of Singing in the Rain. That will always be a scary song for me.
Right. Kubrick was great at that. I think he also did that with Dr. Strangelove. He ended with an old classic that's a very upbeat.
Right. It's a Wonderful World.
Till we meet again.
Till we meet again?
Yeah.
And the Vera Lynn song?
I think that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it has that weird effect of being sort of happy, but you know something's creepy is going on.
So it's the juxtaposition, right, of, you know, what should be a happy song with terrible goings on screen.
Yeah. All Tarantino tried to do a lot of that when he first started out, too. It became kind of, I'm going to say it, a little bit overused at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. We're speaking with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. Let's talk actual soundtracks. Kristen, give me an example of a movie score that really got you.
I don't think there's anything scarier out there than the Omen soundtrack. This won an Oscar. It is so scary. It's so terrifying. It's tapping into a lot of the fears we all have that have a relationship to religion, to punishment, to a preacher at the pulpit. And you hear this heavy organ. You hear this choir. You don't know what they're saying. It sounds something about Jesus. It sounds something about Satan. And it reminds you of somebody at the pulpit pounding it, just saying, you're in trouble, you're going to hell. Oh, you are, because there's an omen here. He's going to take you down with him. And anything that just seems totally benign in the movie, like there's one scene.
There is nothing benign in that movie.
That's
that
true.
Movie scared the pants off
it's
me.
It's a scary movie, but there are scenes where it's just like, look, it's, you know, it's a parent and child in a car. No, it's not.
Right.
That is the omen
it's
with
you. It's a kid on a tricycle.
Oh.
What's going to happen now?
Yeah. Oh, you know what's going to happen.
And you'll hear this while it does. That is some of the music from the 1976 film The Omen. That is still chilling.
It's so creepy. And that scene, if you watch it without the music, let's say you put on, I don't know, a song by the Beatles over that. It's really just a priest running through the churchyard while there's a windstorm.
Right.
But you put that music on, it's not a churchyard anymore. It's a scary, hellish place suddenly. I don't even know what those voices are saying, but they're terrifying. Whatever they're saying, it's totally scary.
Does that work for you, Rafer?
You know, it is a pretty good soundtrack. That particular scene, I remember being a little bit hokey. Maybe I'm just a nitpicker, but I always remember thinking, well, if all the devil had to do is just create a big storm to kill that priest and stab him in the heart with that giant antenna that topples
right,
off the church.
Comes off the top of the church, yeah.
Like, why didn't you do that 30 minutes ago before you had that conversation with Gregory Peck? I mean, if you could do it any moment, you know, why'd you wait?
Well, Rafer, what about you? What's your pick for a soundtrack that really scared you?
I would have to go back to the Exorcist, the William Friedkin movie, the one that kind of started it all. I love that Exorcist theme. And I was trying to think of a movie before that had used this kind of staccato style in its horror movie soundtrack. Usually you've got what Kristen's talking about, some kind of religious motif. You've got a lot of strings. I know that Psycho used kind of the stabbing string motif.
Right, right.
But this quick, jangly-nerved kind of motif that The Exorcist had, that seemed new to me at the time, and I'd never heard that before. We've heard it a lot since, but not then.
This is some of Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells, which became famous as the theme from The Exorcist.
Thank you.
Exorcist, main theme from the William Friedkin movie picked for us by Rafer Guzman. Kristen Meinzer, you find that scary?
It's pretty creepy. I have to agree. I have to agree with Rafer. That those just tune up. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Creepy.
And then there's those sharp stabbing electric guitar chords. And,
yeah.
So I understand what Friedkin saw or heard in this, but this is, if you listen to the whole piece by Mike Oldfield, this is like this beautiful kind of pastoral English countryside thing.
Is that right? Does
it? Yes, yes, it does. With, you know, with like all the instruments coming in and Viv Stanchel, the narrator, going, and introducing Tubular Bells.
I did not know that, but yeah, I do remember that album being sort of a new agey kind of landmark.
That album, well, because of the film, mostly because of the Exorcist, that album put Mike Oldfield and Virgin Records on the map. We have, you know, the Exorcist to thank for Virgin Records, Virgin Record Stores, Virgin Airlines. They put all of them on the map because this thing sold a gazillion copies.
Yeah.
The Takeaways Movie Date podcast is co-hosted by Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, who've been with me here in the Soundcheck House of Horrors. Kristen, Rafer, great to have you guys back with us on
Thanks
Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for having us, John.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.